Warm welcome to this first AI seminar at Norges Bank. And this is just a huge moment because we have never seen a technology like this. And it's moving not in a straight curve, it's continuing to curve up. And it's nearly vertical what this technology can do now. And so the issue is what we call the technology overhang. Are we able to utilize all this technology? And that is really the tough part, I think, is to get the organizations to absorb and to utilize what we have. So, we are, as you know, the most transparent fund in the world. And why is transparency good? Well, I think it's good because people can look in and see what we do, and we believe that that creates trust. But I think equally important is that we can look out and see what the world is doing. And I think that's why we have been very, very keen on absorbing this new technology, because we also talk to leaders across the world and we see what it can do if you apply it in a correct way. And then we thought it was great to invite all of you, not because we think we got it right, but because we also want to learn from you. And we think that if we share with you what we know, you will share with us what you know. And the cool thing, we just do not compete. We can cooperate and share good practices across the board and across the country. And I have this dream of being able that we together, you know, the private and public, can basically lift productivity in this country. That's a good ambition, I think. We have a lot of user cases across the firm, and we could have picked many, many different ones. We picked 10, which we think gives kind of a taste of different things we do. Some of them help us make more money, some make us save money, some improve efficiency, some improves accuracy and quality, and some just prevents us from doing boring stuff. Because I think in this new world, we should not spend our time doing boring stuff. And hopefully you all agree with that. So what we're going to do, first, take you through why we are in the situation we are now with our technology, briefly by Birgitte. The journey we've had on AI and how we have tried to make it to permeate the whole organization. Lydia is going to talk about the framework we have for doing this in a correct manner, because of course it needs to be compliant and it needs to be correct and safe. And then Trond, together with 10 of our colleagues, will take you through a lot of user cases. But first, Birgitte, over to you.
Thank you, Nikolai. So we've done many transformations in MBIM since 2015. But today, I want to talk about three major steps that we have done that has built the foundation for our AI strategy. So the first thing we did was to insource operations. So before that, we had an external vendor that took care of settlement, corporate actions, fund accounting, evaluation, everything. But when we scaled into new markets, we wanted deeper expertise and richer data. So the solution for that was to bring it all home. We owned the process, and we also wanted to own the knowledge. So the next big thing we did was to move all our IT infrastructure, all our IT systems, to public cloud. So before that, we used to rent space in an external data center, outsource the technology with it. But what we saw was that we had a data ceiling in a way. But what we wanted was to have a data horizon. We wanted instant scale on demand, and we wanted to get away from server refresh cycles. When we had moved over to public cloud, we saw quickly that our old databases, which we had also moved over, did not meet the same requirements. We were not able to utilize this scalability that the cloud provider gave us. So what did we do then? we decided that we had to move our old database solutions over to a modern setup so that we could have the same scalability.
Is it fun to clean data?
It's no fun at all.
It's the most kind of boring job there ever is. Does anybody thank you for cleaning your data? No. How do you get people to clean data? You basically tell them that 31st of January, we are going to turn the old data off.
Yeah.
If you sit there the day after and have no data, you are going to look very stupid. We had a lot of late nights and an enormous work by the whole organization.
Yeah, that was a lot of tidy up and rewrite of code for basically everyone in the company. Now we have one place for internal and external data with high quality, and it's tidy up, and it can be used for AI. It's called Mart MBIM Core. This is how much I love our new data warehouse. These are the three things that we have done that has been the foundation of our success within AI. I will now give the word over to Stian, who will talk you through what we did after that.
I'll take you through our AI journey, and having a good data warehouse and a lot of compute in the cloud has absolutely been necessary for us to get on with the AI journey. It all started about 2 years ago when Nicolai had Sam Altman from OpenAI and Dario Amodei from Anthropic on his podcast, and he found out we should be 20% more efficient. He said, "Stian, you make that happen." I said, "Thank you. That's an easy target to fix." To see how we actually got that working is that him being a battery, Duracell battery that never goes out of the energy on the top, is pushing the organization throughout the last 2 years. He has pushed everyone. Everyone has gotten the tools, they've gotten the time, they have experiments, they've created a lot of different project on how they can use AI to improve themselves. That is not enough. If we're gonna be 20% more efficient, and if we're gonna start using AI, we have to change our habits. We needed to push everyone a lot and nudge them again and again and again. We created an upskill program for everyone. I'll take you through that. We also created an ambassador network to help people get going here. To keep the nudging going, we created this Tech Year 2025 that was full of activities to help bring AI to the focus of everyone. First of all, we created the ambassador network, and you can call it champions if you like, it doesn't matter. There were 20 volunteers from all over the organization. They were given the task of finding the one use case in your team that you think can be a valuable project with AI, solve it with the help of the other ambassadors, the AI team, but also with the help of Anthropic. Twice a week, Anthropic help us get started by doing creating training for these ambassadors and the AI team for 2 months. As soon as, you know, the project will keep rolling here, the ambassador solve the project, they turn around, showcase their team, but also the rest of the organization. We can soon see, you know, the value of AI in, you know, all the corners of the company. We also had to create this Tech Year. The important message with this slide here, with a lot of different bullet point, is that whenever something happened in NBIM in 2025, it had AI in it. If you had a gathering, AI was on the agenda. We had this large tech day in London, Oslo, and Singapore, which focused entirely on technology, tech stack, cloud, the data warehouse, and absolutely on AI. If you had a leader summit, AI was on the agenda. It kept rolling and rolling, reminding people to use AI in their daily work. We trained the ambassadors, but we also had to train the rest of the organization. We created 7 30-minute sessions with different topics: AI and NBIM, Meet Claude, Prompt and Critical Thinking, and Responsible AI, and so forth. This was done for everyone.
This is mandatory. Now, do people like mandatory? They hate mandatory because it's like going back to, you know, primary school. Can it be voluntary? No. because the people who don't want to do it are the people who need it the most. It has to be mandatory, and you have to be on them like a wasp, okay? A bit like my wife on me.
So everyone got the training, they got the time, they could experiments, and they also got a bit of help or support from the AI team. We started off with just 3 people, and we have now grown to 10. We are the catalyst. We are not doing all of the AI in NBM. It's definitely the organization that is doing it, and you will see that from the use cases. We are trying just to enable AI. We are providing the tools, the AI and MLOps platform. And I'm really happy that we're now at 10, because it's only that is a lot of work. And feel free to reach out to the guys there in the audience there afterwards. So, tools. First of all, we are using Claude. Everyone in NBM is using Claude on a daily basis. With Claude comes Claude Code. And more than half of the employees are using Claude Code to create solutions. So more than half of the people in NBM are actually creating code. We just got Gemini this month to complement Claude. And already, more than 2/3 have signed on and started using it. Cursor is also a development tool, and about 70% is using Cursor, but more and more are moving over to Claude Code there. So we have really been through 3 different phases of our AI transformation. First of all, we gave everyone the tools. We gave them the training. We gave them ample time to experiment. And from bottom-up approach, it created a lot of different projects in NBIM. We had thousands and thousands of projects in Claude projects just to try it out to get people going. And the second stage is really, since we're going to be 20% more efficient, is there this one use case that can improve all of NBIM, or do we have another high valuable project that we can really find? We interviewed the chiefs, the global heads, Nikolai, we had workshops. We found 171 new projects. We did not find the one, you know, great AI use case. So the good thing is that we weren't that inefficient before we started this. The bad thing is that we had to do all of these smaller projects to actually then become more efficient. So a lot of work. So the last phase is we need to deliver on all the things we have been given, the tools and the experimentation and, you know, the project we want to deliver. But already then, in the autumn, we saw that AI is moving so fast. The upskilling program is already a bit out of date. So we had to do a second round of upskilling for everyone. And we also did a lot of focus on Claude Code and more the core developers to get that rolling, because we saw that that had a ripple effect throughout the company. And I think we need to continue upskilling as, you know, AI changes. Just last week, we had a 2-day hackathon with a focus on the core developers again, and this just keep on pushing. The last thing I want to mention is that traditionally, we have based our project culture in NBM on Scrum methodology from Jeff Sutherland and Ken Swober from the 1990s. 8 developers and 1 from the business working together, creating or solving a business case. They have a lot of ceremonies, they have daily stand-ups, they have sprint retrospective. It takes a lot of time. With AI, we see that it doesn't make sense anymore. It's better to get rid of all of the, more or less all the rituals in Scrum, take 2 developers, 1 business person, and have them work together, autonomous, but also empowered to take all the decisions they need in the project to get the speed up to a whole new level just by utilizing AI here. But what does that mean when we trust AI to do so many things? It means that we need to ensure that we have, you know, good code quality, good deliverance on other aspects from the AI as well. We need to trust what it's doing. We need to follow the rules on how we should use AI in a compliant manner. And we have created a framework for that. And for that, Lydia, our AI compliance officer, will take you through it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. AI is moving fast. It's changing the way we work. how we interact with data, and how we make decisions. Now, at the fund, we're fully aware of the importance of ensuring the AI we use is always done responsibly. And that's why we've built a responsible AI framework. So what does that mean in practice? Let me show you. So first, we make the rules. Our responsible AI guideline sets requirements for every employee when we're buying, building, or using AI. The guideline aligns with law, like the EU AI Act, as well as globally recognized AI standards. It addresses some key areas, like protecting people's data and ensuring human involvement in all AI systems that help with investments or people-related decisions. Now, the guideline takes a risk-based approach. That means the way we would handle a simple email filtering system is completely different to the way we would handle an AI system that impacts people. So the guideline sets the rules, but how do we make sure they're actually followed in practice? Our operating model. This is a document which translates the AI guideline into a functioning governance structure. It sets out key processes that we all need to follow, from the development of an AI system all the way through to deployment and beyond. It addresses risk management, legal compliance, security, and lots more. Now, at the very center of this governance structure, we have our AI governance working group. It's a team drawn from representatives from across key teams at MBIM. And the role of the AI governance working group is simple. Make sure responsible AI isn't just something we talk about, but something we actually practice. Now, the working group keep up to date with regulatory and industry-wide AI developments. They talk about AI issues, and they find solutions. Oh, I've gone the wrong way, sorry. Now, one thing that we're very aware of, a governance structure is only as robust as the people within it. And that's why we've trained all our employees on responsible AI. We want every single employee to know what AI currently can and can't do. We want them all to look critically at AI-related output and to feel comfortable raising any concerns. Because after all, responsible AI isn't just a compliance function, it's all our jobs. Now, the technology is moving so quickly, and our governance structure needs to keep up with it. But we're quite confident that we've built something that works for us. A guideline which sets the rules. An operating model which translates these rules into actionable processes. A working group which keeps all of this alive. And most importantly, our people at the fund, who, with the right training and culture, practice responsible AI every single day. Now, these elements together have allowed us to build a culture of responsible innovation, one where we can work smarter, work faster, make bolder decisions, all while staying on the right side of the law and holding ourselves to high standards. So now I'll hand over to Trond, who will talk about AI strategy and show you some of our use cases. Thank you.
Thank you. So the key question is, how do you turn this foundation into something that has true business value, right? And then it starts with, you know, what is your objective? And in MBIM, it's to achieve the highest possible long-term return in a secure, responsible, cost-efficient, and transparent manner. That's what we aim for. So every year, every third year would have been too frequent, we formulate a more short-term strategy for how to do this, right? What do we set out as our ambition for the next 3 years? And so in our recently released strategy plan, we mention AI a lot across every function, across every department, every individual. This is just one example of a pretty bold ambition, if you ask me, to cut all our manual processes in half by the end of 2028. So we'll see how we get there. The key is really what we've been through, I think, already, the foundation that we have, that we have a cloud-native infrastructure. Basically, our infrastructure is code, not physical hardware. We have a data lake or a cloud data in Snowflake. We have the tools that Stian showed us. We have upskilled the organization, we have the competency, and we have the proper guardrails. So now it's really up to each and every one of us to make the best use of this new technology. So we'll take you through, in rapid succession, 10 different use cases, 3 minutes each, and we'll start with the core of our business, which is investing. Ole will talk about how they, with a team of 5 people, managed 2 trillion kroner in European equities.
Thank you, Trond. Imagine being contacted by Goldman Sachs. Ferrari's largest shareholder wants to sell shares worth 30 billion kroner. That's more than 3 weeks on normal trading volume. Goldman is reaching out to a few big investors and wants to know if we're in, by how much, and at what price. They need an answer within 1 hour. Would you buy? In our team, we get about 200 of these requests every year, and with time, these transactions has contributed billions to the fund's excess returns. We clearly see that the better we are at using data to decide when to pass, when to participate, and when to really swing big, the more money we make. Because these transactions, they come with risks, and every deal is different. So to decide on the Ferrari deal, there's a lot of things we need to understand, like who's selling and why? Was it anticipated by the market? How have similar things gone in the past? What is the fair price? Will this trigger forced buying by index trackers? And so on. But the challenge is that we have very little time, and the data is everywhere. It's in external, internal sources, it's in text and numbers, it's in databases, web search, and algorithms. And the output of one might affect the output of another, which makes this very difficult to automate, because you cannot solve everything by code, and you cannot solve everything by a language model. We need both. So we built agents, specialized AI programs with dedicated tasks and tools working together. And to give an example, here you can see one agent searching the web to find out who's really the owner behind this holding company. Another agent takes the deal text and pulls out the most important data points, and it's all sent through to a third agent, which runs an algorithm to calculate whether this will trigger an index effect or not. In reality, there are more agents with more tools, but the point is that in very short time, we have the full decision basis ready, with more data and better analysis than before. We started this by building a prototype within the investment team. Before we got help from a very talented developer, Johan, sits right here, who helped us take what we started and build something real. So when Goldman calls, we spend less time gathering all data, more time analyzing it, which leads to better decisions, and that we make more money. Thank you.
So we're moving on to communication. Transparency is a big thing for the fund, probably the most transparent fund there is. What's cool about our communication department, as well as being good communicator, is that it's become a lot more data-driven. And to explain a user case, Sara will take us through.
Echo is a live overview of all of our communications activities across channels. We're not developers, but we built this ourselves using AI tools. And the last year, we've been working on taking this from providing stats to actual insights. In 2025, the fund was mentioned in almost 50,000 articles. so far this year, more than 5,000. For a press team of only 2 people, it's simply impossible to keep track of everything that's being written. That's why we built an AI-powered sentiment analysis to help us do exactly that. So this is an agent-based system where each article goes through a main agent that delegates to specialized sub-agents that classify the article's sentiment or participation in the article, the priority of the media outlet, the article type, and how prominent the fund is in the article, as well as topics and people being mentioned. And all of this data is stored directly into our data warehouse, Snowflake. Existing media monitoring tools are expensive and honestly not that good. So building this ourselves is cheaper, and we're able to display the data exactly the way we want it. And here you can see one of the sentiment pages that we built in Echo. This is a little while back, and as you can see, there was quite a bit of negative coverage at the time. So we built a timeline where you can easily drill down to see exactly who has written what. We also built an insights feature where we're using AI to summarize the coverage and provide us with the key highlights. This enabled us to faster get an overview of everything that's being written, what's driving the coverage, and where we might need to act. Lastly, we built a chatbot sitting on top of Echo, being an expert on all of the comms data. So instead of digging through the dashboard, we can simply ask, like analyze engagement on social media. EchoBot then dives into Snowflake, fetches data on LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube, and generates a report. And what's important here is that this is not a predefined view. It analyzes across channels on the spot. It can identify trends and come up with strategic recommendations. Previously, this would require us to log into each of these platforms, fetch the data, and put this together ourselves. So we essentially automated some of our internal reporting. So AI has enabled us to build our own systems, automate analysis, and make better decisions faster.
So essentially, when you run a fund like this, you are risk managing. So you've seen, as of late, markets up and down, energy prices up and down. That is something that we can stomach. That is actually something that we can play to our advantage. But if there's one risk that potentially keeps us awake at night, it's cybersecurity risk. And Johan, how do you keep us in bed?
We'll see. So part of what I do as working with cybersecurity in the fund is that I think about how will it look like if somebody is trying to attack us? How will it look like if somebody is trying to steal money and basically defraud us? And part of this is that I maintain, together with my colleagues, basically a giant network of invisible tripwires across all of our digital infrastructure. And this is quite a big sort of data collection operation. Just to give you a sense of scale, we collect roughly a trillion data points about MBIM and MBIM's operation throughout the year. And then from those trillion, we surface down maybe somewhere in the range of 1,000,000 to 100,000 things that might be considered suspicious. And then we have to take a broad stroke on that and surface only a very, very tiny portion that we believe is of high value down to myself and my colleagues. So to give you an example of what something like that might look like, is that, for example, an employee who likes football might be using their computer to stream a football match. They might have browsed to some shady place on the internet and gone to a site that we have intelligence on that says that this website also does bad stuff. And then what might happen is that we might get an alert. I might, for example, be woken in the middle of the night, and I have to figure out what's going on. I will usually then just get an alert that says, this computer connected to a bad place on the internet. And gathering all that context and gathering all the sort of surrounding information from the trillion data points that tells me that this is just a normal user that searched for something on Google and then went to a website and basically constructing that full story, that is sort of a human judgment task where I have to decide in what direction do I go and what do I look at, what's important, and what confirms my hypothesis that this is benign or what is an indication that this might be bad. And when I get this phone call in the middle of the night, at the same time, we also have an agent that starts at the exact same time. So while I'm rolling out of bed, this agent has started working immediately, and it does the exact same process. It's trying to figure out where do I need to look, what data do I need to pull in, and what's important, and it's making all these small judgment calls. And ultimately, it produces a report or an investigation, which is very similar to what I would do, that I can use to my initial triage. And it does this quite well. It's gotten really, really good over the last year. And just to sort of put it into perspective, I would say that it does what would have taken me roughly half an hour in 5 minutes. And the other very nice part is, of course, that it's never lazy. So stuff that might be repeating and be very similar, it does it with the same amount of work every single time. Thank you.
So one of the key advantages, I would say, that the fund has is its size and its long-term investment horizon, which makes us an attractive partner for our investee companies. And so we have very good access to the companies and have dialogue with these companies. We meet with the chairpersons, the CEOs, and the lead groups. And so when you have those meetings, you want to make sure that you make the most of them. So in preparing for those meetings, we have developed an AI use case that Christina from London we'll talk about just now. Christina?
Hello from London. So we've been running a very exciting AI project over the past few months, and it really improves what is a very important process for how we invest in equities and engage with the companies in our portfolio. And it's been a close collaboration between the AI team, the portfolio managers, and the stewardship team. In 2025, MBIM held more than 3,000 company meetings. Each of these meetings take about 3 hours to prepare. So this is nearly 10,000 hours every year that we can spend more effectively. And this is something that was very important to us to build ourselves. Firstly, it plays to our competitive edge. As Trond said, we're a large long-term investor, and that means we get unique access to company management. And secondly, we have a very distinctive approach to company meetings, and we have extensive training in interview and interrogation techniques. And that's something leading external solutions couldn't really replicate. So here you can see an early version of our solution. It pulls up the companies that we're meeting over the coming weeks. So you can see Meta, for example. The model loads data that only we have access to, investment hypotheses and meeting notes. You can then choose which AI model you want to use. You can add guidance, you can attach documents, and it then feeds into a multi-agent system. So you have one agent builds a plan, then 3 to 5 sub-agents go out and research different sources. A final agent gets the output, and this agent has been trained on our very best meeting prep examples and internal interview technique materials, which then evaluates the input and decides whether it's good enough or not. So here you can recognize in the output, the prompt that we entered. You can check the sources that it references so you can make sure there's no hallucination. And you can also recognize our approach. So questions that build rapport with the company and that keep a long-term focus. And we've also then made sure that we can iterate on the agenda in a chat. And we're going to continue to develop the product, and we'll soon add a simulation component. This will use podcasts, past meetings, and company communications to predict what the counterpart is likely to tell you. So this makes sure that you'll be able to both refine your plan, make sure that you really get what you're after in the meeting, but also get feedback on how you run the company meetings in general using speech to speech. So in short, 10,000 hours better spent. The model gathers information and builds structure so portfolio managers can focus on the strategic questions. It will be higher quality. We've trained the model on our very best examples, and the simulation will make us all better. And finally, it helps us make the most of our competitive edge. Thank you.
Okay, so the fund has millions and millions of transactions in more than 60 markets every year. These are highly regulated markets, so we want to make sure that all of these trades that we do are legit and comply with the market regulations. So, Oscar, how do you use technology to improve on that one?
The risk is real. Cases of insider trading, market manipulation are not rare. We read about them often. We're also seeing active enforcement in the Nordics. So this is a big deal. Market integrity is vital for any market participant, and for an investor like MBIM, documenting proper compliance is foundational. So how did we get here? Well, with increasing focus on stricter regulation, the buy side, like MBIM, was now required to demonstrate own trade monitoring capabilities, traditionally relying on the sell side, banks, to cover this for us. MBIM selected an external system in 2018 that uses advanced market risk models and spits out alerts that the compliance team can manually investigate. But this system, it doesn't know MBIM. It doesn't know if a trade was as a result of a rebalancing, an index event, or if we met the company the week before. That's context that's carried manually by the compliance team today. And alert clearance, to be honest, is process work. You're checking for the same type of things, you can get fatigued. We're spending time on false positives, and this is what we're now changing. Introducing our AI surveillance team. We have 6 sub-agents that are each reviewing all alerts spit out from the system. They specialize in trade context, index rebalancing, company news, industry news, timing patterns, and company interactions. And they assess every single alert simultaneously, the same way all the time, never get lazy. They all feed into a master agent, which we call our enhanced vigilant agent, or Eva. She's always on, completes a full audit trail for every case assessed. Every alert is assessed simultaneously, and she's an expert on pattern recognition. And there are always 3 cases where our master agent hands over to a human, and that is when the case is genuinely ambiguous. It's also when you can't automate judgment. And lastly, a decision has to be owned by a human, and that's where we come in, and those cases get sent to compliance. We have the same team, but with vastly better coverage. Thank you.
So the starting point for our management of the fund is a benchmark that is given to us by the Ministry of Finance. That benchmark contains roughly 7,000 companies. So if we were to implement that benchmark, we would buy in equal share, roughly 1.5% of each of those companies. Now the question is, do you actually want to own all of those companies? And Morten, do you think so?
Probably not. So in forensic accounting, we have a little bit of a challenge. The challenge is to remove the bad apples from the fund. And on average, each analyst spend about 2 weeks doing a deep dive on each of these companies, looking through the financial statements, the footnotes. There's millions of pages to read in all the 7,000 companies that we look to sell from. So what we need to do is to remove the financial makeup that makes these companies look better than they really are. So we need to clean up the accounts, so to speak, 16 years back in time for all of these 7,000 companies. And then we need to train the machines to learn to spot this type of financial makeup. So how do we do this? Well, one practical example here is that we're looking for different keywords. So here's a payables extension. This is what we're looking for. So we have found a keyword here in the footnotes. And then AI is picking out relevant sentences in those couple of pages before and after. And then it picks out the number we're interested in. So in this case, a donut producer has extended her payables by $745 million. Then we store that and we learn from it. So we're making many different kinds of agents that is trying to spot this kind of financial makeup. And this is the company's moving revenues and costs, earnings or cash flow back or forth in time to look better than they really are. And the changes can be quite substantial for some of the adjustments. Then we're having a machine learning model to learn from all this data. So what we have made in-house, we have a quite a unique data set where we have gone through every forensic accounting research shop and gotten all of their historic cases where a company has put makeup on their accounts, and when the market found out, then the share price has fallen quite a lot. So we're having thousands of these cases, and we're training the machine learning model to spot similar cases. So the output of the model is the percentage likelihood that a company is going to develop into such a forensic accounting case, and the share price is going to fall. So this model is in production, and we have it used daily in cooperation with Ole Syrstad and his team. And we're working full speed ahead to make more and more of these agents to spot more and more of the financial makeup. Thank you.
And now for financial statements without makeup, I guess. So this is Torjus. He will explain how we, on a regular basis, disclose a full IFRS-compliant financial statement based on the millions and millions of transactions across a multiple array of different instruments. How do we do that?
Every quarter, we produce NBIM's financial statements, notes, and analysis. It's a solid process, yet resource-intensive. Think complex Excel workbooks with long formula chains and lots of manual overrides and adjustments. This, keeping the quality we expected from ourselves took a lot of time and effort. This time and effort came at a cost. We spent so much time in production mode that little were left for deeper analysis and insights. And critical knowledge lived within few individuals, creating a dependency we really wanted to move away from. It's a high-quality process that actually deserved a better infrastructure. Sorry, this is the slide I was supposed to show. Now on to the next one. Good processes can always get better. Ours were no exception, and AI gave us the tools to do so. We decided to build from scratch. Together with fund accounting, we started with the underlying accounting data to establish one single source of truth. We made sure the data was clean, structured, and reliable so that the AI tools could do what they do best. Our team of two are not developers. So we use Claude Code and Cursor to write the code. Even the most complex calculations and aggregations now run directly in our underlying custom-built datasets, feeding automatically into our note production, financial statements production, and analysis. We kept human control throughout, bringing accounting expertise and business logic to make sure the output was correct, while maintaining internal control, even with a new way of working. The result is a platform that's already delivering. Better analysis earlier and faster production. Our analysis are now available even before the accounting system closes on business day 10. FX and tax at the push of a button on business day 2. Secured lending and borrowing on business day 7. All of this gives us the time to actually investigate and correct before it's too late. Full automation will free up 8 days across 2.5 people in our little team, previously dedicated entirely to production. This time we can now spend on analysis, control, quality assurance, and audit can move earlier in the process. A good example of this is note 14, collateral and offsetting, a note that I think very few actually reads, yet one person spent one full week producing this note. Now it's done in only a couple of hours. We're just getting started. Across NBIM and together with Norges Bank, we're implementing a new reporting tool. With this in place, we'll have fully automated processing from transaction recording to official external reporting for a large part of the portfolio. To showcase even further where we actually are today, AI enabled us to automatically produce note 4, income and expense from equities, bonds, and financial derivatives, and note 11, foreign exchange gains and losses, in the annual report 2025. So these are beautiful notes. Go in, have a look. I recommend it. Thank you.
And without makeup.
Thanks, Doris. So we go to London again for Christina. Responsible investing is a big thing for the fund, right? And so we have deployed new technology also to improve our risk monitoring when it comes to ES and G factors.
Hello, everyone. So as has been mentioned, we invest in over 7,000 companies across 60 countries. And as a responsible investor, we need to know whether any of these companies are linked to serious issues such as forced labor, child labor, deforestation, corruption, and so on. And this means we have to screen all of these companies. But if a human analyst were to do that, we estimate we would need 3,000 analysts working an entire weekend. And our team is only 8 people. Therefore, we have to leverage AI to help speed up our process. And today, we're going to walk you through one example of such a screening process. So today, with AI, we can screen companies at a scale we simply couldn't before. The concept is simple. For each company name, the AI searches across any publicly available source, think news, financial data, government records, and local media, and outputs a structured risk assessment. The key to making a system like this really valuable for us is that our expertise is involved in every step of the process. The screening process runs in 2 phases. For the first phase, we use a lighter and faster AI model. And here, the AI looks for any indication of a company's involvement in the issues we screen for. And as expected, most companies clear this stage. But when anything comes up, it triggers phase 2. In phase 2, we deploy multiple AI agents, each responsible for researching the company from a different angle. This means that one agent could be tracing supply chain links, another agent could be looking at direct operations, while a third agent looks at financial relationships. Once all of our agents are done working, they come together, summarize their findings, and give each company a risk score. So for step 2, our human analysts jump back in and make the decisions. We review every company that the AI flagged as high risk. This means that us humans, we verify the sources, we check the reasoning, and we make the final decision. Now, if the risk is confirmed, the high-risk company is flagged in 2 of our internal portfolio management systems, Polaris and in our investment simulator. In addition to being flagged, we can also choose to engage with company management, or in the most serious cases, for the small companies in our portfolio, we can choose to do a risk-based divestment. So today, we can use AI to screen many more companies so that our team can focus on what actually matters. We can, of course, not promise that we catch everything. But what we can say is that we can screen more companies, look at more sources, more languages, and go more in depth than ever before, so that when we see a risk, we can act.
So one department that is really all over this new technology is our legal and tax department. So Kristi will join me now on stage and talk about the user case from her department.
So what if you could walk into a negotiation already knowing the other side's strategy and how to redirect that to get the terms you need? When I was working on an important contract, I saw an opportunity. If AI can model language patterns, then it can model negotiation patterns. So I created the negotiation simulator. It has 2 key functions, planning and simulation. In planning mode, it creates a written strategy plan that helps anticipate the arguments and find an optimal combination of terms and concessions. And so far, it has delivered. We're able to predict over 80% of the arguments. We achieve a higher ratio of our key terms, And these are the terms that have significant risk and revenue impact on the fund, so it matters. We also create a written plan a lot faster than we used to before. So we save time and we can focus on more strategic issues. But simulation is what sets this apart. In voice mode, I can simulate a live negotiation in a risk-free environment. I can also ask for feedback to improve my skills. And I can even switch roles to see how AI would handle the situation if it were sitting in my seat. Here is a short video showing you, I think, how we do this in action with the simulator.
Can you give me a scenario for a price renewal negotiation with a software license vendor?
We're ready to begin the live simulation for your software license renewal negotiation.
So the situation is that we have had some service issues in the past year.
20% reduction is quite substantial. That's a significant ask for us.
I need you to add on to that a higher rate of discount.
I'm not going to say it's impossible, but if I'm going to agree to an exit clause, I need something concrete in return.
Okay, so he's a tough negotiator, isn't he? All right, but that is just one way that I'm leading my group to go beyond automation to innovation. When I saw our contracts portfolio, I saw not just one more opportunity, but multiple opportunities. And why is that? That's because everything we do here connects to a contract. Contracts contain a lot of important information, of course. But if you look at those contracts at scale, you can find patterns, changes over time, connections that you could not find otherwise. So now we're able to do that using AI, and we're able to do it at scale. For example, we're looking at force majeure clauses and our combined impact under different scenarios. We're also trying to look at how different triggers across our investment contracts might impact or delay our access to credit, collateral, or other issues. So those are just some of the ways that we're using AI, but we're not just using it to help us negotiate contracts. We're using it to help us extract strategic information that adds real value. Thank you.
And so for our 10th and final, Jon Egil will talk about how we, inside the fund, manage all the transactions that cross different portfolios. We have 250 different portfolios, so portfolio managers choosing to buy or sell something, you know, at different points in time. We have cash coming in and out of the fund, and we have this benchmark that also changes on a monthly basis. So to control all that, and even better, actually try to make money out of that, or not lose money. How do we do that?
Thank you, Trond. Now, the fund has grown substantially over the years. Luckily, right? But it also means that our trading needs grow along with it. We are now in a place where we ourselves become our own worst enemy in the market. When we buy so much, we push prices up. And when we sell so much, we push prices down. This footprint in the market, this market impact, as we call it, we estimated last year to 14 billion Norwegian kroner. That's a substantial number. Okay, it's not an accounting cost, so it doesn't show up in your notes, Torjus. But it's a significant and real value destruction. It hinders us in doing the assignments that you all have a task us with doing. So what do you do? Here are some ideas. We could, for example, predict the market. AI helps us find patterns in the market and give us probabilities for which stocks will probably rise in price and which stocks will probably fall. So when you give me an order, I look at it and say, okay, you ask me to buy something, but probably it would rise in price. I need to step up a little bit and be a little more active. But on the other side, if I predict, AI predicts, the stock will actually fall in price, I can be patient. I don't have to gun it. I don't have to push the metal to the pedal to actually do that with a lot of impact. I can step back, okay? So predictions build patience. Another thing we can do is to look at all the internal portfolios. As Trond mentioned, we have multiple different strategies internally, and sometimes they touch the same companies. They touch the same stocks for fair reasons. But if someone is giving us an order on a Monday, and we have reason to believe that we might get the opposite later in the week, we don't go to the market. We park it instead. So right now, I checked the parking lot this morning. We have 10 billion parked right now. Last year, we parked more than 120 billion. And we don't go to the market. We don't pay tax twice. We don't pay commissions twice. We don't push it up first and then push it down later. We just sit on it. We utilize the balance sheet and the risk-bearing capacity we have to just take a step back. And finally, this is super exciting. The way AI helps us improve the way we work. Okay? So everything we do has always been driven by a solid investment process as the foundation. And then human understanding. We have great people. They really understand the market, what's driving the various companies, what's going on in the news, in the macro, in the politics. And we understand deeply what's going on. And then AI sort of came in recently as the icing on the cake. Well, it's cute, right? But what's happening now is that that arrow of knowledge is going down, right? AI is helping us as human beings to understand more, faster, deeper, red teaming analyses, providing different perspectives, looking at things from multiple angles. And then also, we are improving our core fundamental processes. Not only how we do them, i.e. automation, doing the same stuff faster, but also working smarter, doing better work, right? That's quite amazing. So then we're going back to where we started, the problem with the 14 billion. Is it a lot or a little? It's clearly a lot, right? But had we run 2025 with the cost structure we've had just a few years back, that number would have been closer to 20. Is AI part of, is AI all of that saving? No. But it's a significant part of how we have saved 4, 5, maybe even 6 billion kroners in the way we trade for the fund. Thank you.
Thanks.
So that was 10 different examples. I hope it was useful. At least that's where we are today. Now this technology is moving so fast, so every week, every month, there's a new model out, there's a new opportunity out. So stay tuned, and we will certainly tune our organization to make the most of this technology.